another bar. Pack up the car. The neon is a smiling on my feet. And all the world is hard wooden smoke. And I need to find a place where I can sleep. And I miss the fields where the corn grows up so high. And our little house is settled beneath the clear, unbridled sky. One day, real soon, I'll be home again, where the dirt is black as coal and our laughter never ends. Another night, another drink. I couldn't drown my sorrows with the sea. And I'm trying hard with all my heart. There are things that I will never be. No matter where, from St. Louis clear to Rome, I miss the white oak's fallen leaves and the color of my home. One day, real soon, I'll be home again, where the dirt is black as coal and our laughter never ends. Little towns, and I'm sitting above the wheels with their elevator silos and their railroad tracks of steel. One day, real soon, I'll be home again, where the dirt is black as coal and our laughter.
Black as Coal is the name of the song by Ben Bedford, who sang it. He played the guitar, and he was joined by Chas Williams on Papoose guitar, I'm not exactly sure what that is, and Ron De La Vega on the bass. It comes from Ben's first album called Lincoln's Man, recorded in 2006, I believe, and he's got two others, Land of the Shadows 2009, and just last fall came out What We Lost. Ben Bedford is going to be my guest, along with his wife, Carrie, on this hour of Live and Local. He has a local performance coming up in Springfield on Friday, February 1st at Norb Andy's, and lots of other gigs. They just don't happen to be in our area. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks very much for joining us on the show. It's your connection to local performances. And Was it last fall, Ben, that you and I talked on the phone? I'm actually sort of
remembering. Yeah, somewhere in there, October, November maybe.
It was right around the time that the new record came out, I think.
Yeah, it was. Yep.
Because you were having, I don't remember if it was because you were having a CD release, but it might have been.
Possibly. I think I was playing at Sleepy Creek.
Sleepy Creek in Fairmount. Yeah.
But it was right around when the album came out.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And I mean, you were a new name to me, which doesn't mean a whole lot because I tend to, my interest flits all over the place, and I don't keep up with too many individuals outside of the realm of classical music to necessarily know who's who's hot, who's not, and so on. But you appear to be pretty hot, according to a lot of reviewers and a guy who does his midnight special show here on WILL and out of WFMT in Chicago. Rich Warren naming you one of the 50 most influential singer-songwriters of the last 50 years.
Yeah, I think it was like 50 most significant, yeah, which...
It was just something.
Significant, yeah.
And you're how old?
Something. I'm 31.
31, yeah. Well, that...
well, it was quite
that's
an honor
pretty good.
For him to say that.
Yeah, so. Rich has been around a while, and he's encountered so many different singer-songwriters, folk singers of so many different kinds. That, yeah, that's a nice little feather in your cap after not very many years doing this full-time.
Mm-hmm.
About 8 years or so.
Something like that, yeah.
And,
right, about eight.
And what were you doing before that? Or what did you mean to be doing before that?
Well, immediately before that, I was working for the state at the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency in Springfield. I worked there for about a year after I graduated from college. Right, I went to school here in Urbana and
at the University of Illinois.
Yep, exactly. I wasn't just on some street corner learning stuff, I guess. But
well, the thing is, not everybody who listens to this show knows where here is.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point.
Because we've got listeners everywhere.
Sure, that's a good point. Yes, the University of Illinois, and then I worked over the summers and like Christmas breaks when I was in college at the IHPA, and just went there for a year afterwards, and then made the giant leap into playing music full-time, which in hindsight seems both kind of naive and possibly reckless.
Well, I've often wondered that about anybody who picks up a guitar and decides they're going to make their living doing whatever it is they're doing with a guitar, because it's seems so unlikely, to meet with success. But, I mean, I don't know how it's working out for you financially, but at least critically, it seems to be working out really well.
Yeah. Critically, probably better than financially. But, you know, we're eating, so it's good, yeah.
Is Carrie carrying you?
Oh, wow. Let's talk about Kevin.
Yeah.
No, I'm also an artist, actually, so I think it's a unique situation, and you work very hard, and you have to treat everything like a business. I mean, you have to be a business person first, and I think that's part of it. We both sometimes, you know, maybe get a little bit of flack from the starving artist types because we aren't starving. So we're doing all right. So
I'm doing my best to starve, though.
Yeah.
Not very.
Well, you're wearing clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have clothes.
Our socks
and they're
match.
Clean.
And you're not emaciated.
No.
So
much,
that's
no.
Encouraging. And you have children.
Yeah. Mhm. I have two. Yeah. I have two daughters, and so Ben is stepdad to
them. They also
eat.
But,
yeah, they eat well. So nobody's starving.
Nobody's. No.
What kind of artist? I know you do photography.
Photography. Mhm. Yeah.
And if anybody sees these albums or even pokes around the web and finds pictures of Ben Bedford, they're more likely to have been made by Carrie.
Mm-hmm. Often
that
are.
That is accurate. Yeah.
Yeah.
And pretty striking, I think.
Thank you.
I don't know photographic terminology at all, but I find them really striking images.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Not least because he's got these huge sideburns.
Which you can't see on the radio.
I don't know what you call them.
Maybe you can hear them on the radio.
I mean, they look like the original sideburns.
The original
Burnside, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Ambrose Burnside.
I guess you'd call them, I mean, I call them sideburns, but that maybe is slightly understated, I suppose. Giant mutton chops, I guess. They're about as big as they can be without being a beard, I suppose.
This is just something to
just think about while we're talking. Yeah.
Give an image to those to those listening on the radio, since we don't do this as a television show. I started the show leading in with something from your first album, just because I wanted to maybe talk a little bit about some of the progress, but also
sure.
I like the song, and for me anyway, lyrics are I find hard to follow, particularly. The lyrics that people who know better than I praise the highest are usually the ones that I follow the least well.
Uh-huh, sure.
Because there's more complexity to them, and I always read them and think, what exactly is he talking about? So I'll just put the question to you. I mean, I'm assuming okay. from what I remember from our last question, from our last conversation, and from what I've read, that because most of your songs do have some personal or historical connection, mm-hmm. and many of them are rooted in the Midwest, which is where you're rooted, that this mm-hmm. has one or more of those things going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Carrie and I were just kind of talking about the song as we were listening to it, because it's not a song that we play out. We probably haven't played that particular song, Black as Coal, out for several years, but it's sort of, I don't know, I guess falls into the semi-typical, like, I'm out on the road kind of storyline. But it is like sort of a, like, looking back fondly. I mean, I'm going to preempt what I think she's going to say, but...
But it's also just a landscape song, too. It's very much yeah. a song about Illinois, you know, and I think that's one of the neat things about being a regional songwriter is that you get a sense, hopefully, of where the songwriter is literally coming from physically, their literal physical landscape. And that's what I like about a lot of poets, too, is that they sort of incorporate that into their writing. And mm-hmm. I think it's one of those songs.
I like place names a lot. For whatever reason.
Well, Black as Coal, the title, you know, when I saw the title, I thought, well, I can imagine a number of things that this could be about, and they were all wrong.
That's fine.
Because, you know, the what is the line, where the dirt is black as coal.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we have black dirt around here?
It's pretty black.
In the spring, before things start coming up, when it's pretty wet.
Maybe not the corn, after it's been... heavily, planted with corn after 5 or 6 years, then it's maybe where the dirt is brown as sand or something.
Brown,
but
brown as dirt? It's not quite as euphonious.
You can tell I'm, in spite of being surrounded by farms, I apparently don't look at the dirt very carefully.
There are maybe places with blacker dirt. I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to make any erroneous claims about the blackness of
accuracy
my dirt,
is very important.
But yeah, but you know, it's pretty dark, pretty rich.
The songs, the albums since then, this one from Lincoln's Man, Land of the Shadows, and now What We Lost, carry on the sense that I described of history. That you're very much a history buff.
Sure.
And that's and buff isn't even the right word. I mean, you're pretty. My impression is you steep yourself in this.
Yeah, I try to. Yeah, maybe not even. It just sort of happens that steeping might be a good way to put it because mm-hmm. I just sort of try to incorporate what I read and. Yeah.
Well, it's also what you studied at.
It was
at the university.
Yep, I studied history. Yep. And I love history. There's something just about the reality of it, I think, that draws me to it or something.
And then some compulsion to take what you've learned and throw it into a song.
Sure, yeah.
And the poetic ability to make it sound good.
Well, thank you.
And not sound like a history lesson.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, hopefully not. I think I want the songs to sound... I want the songs to have a definite grounding in reality and precise details, but I don't want them to seem like a history lesson or whatever. I want people to listen to them and think, wow, that's a really good story, or maybe not even relate necessarily to them, but can listen to them and feel, I don't know.
Like it's personal. It's not just
that
about
compelling
a story. It's about real people that, lived and breathed and walked. And
well, why don't we hear another example? This one, of course, not off of a record, but live in our studio.
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, let's play, since we were just talking about history and the person, let's do What We Lost.
Okay, sure.
This is the title track to the new album, and it's a song that I actually wrote from my grandfather's perspective. Whoop. And he lost his youngest brother in the Second World War, and this is sort of him looking back at that. ¶¶
Well, I'm going back to find something that I left behind. And this fading photograph, folded one too many times. We didn't know that we were poor, running laughing out the door. I hear the corn was 8 feet high. In the fall of 44. And if I see you in the summer, this whole damn thing is done. Maybe we will not remember what we lost and what we won. We were smiling like we felt. No tongue could ever tell. And you smoked that cigarette like the world could go to hell. An army issue green, in the damp Midwestern heat, the midday light of June. Busting at the seams. And if I see you in the summer, this whole damn thing is done. Maybe we will not remember what we lost and what we won. I wish that I could say what I can never say. My brother and my friend, too young to fade away. And if I see you in the summer, this whole damn thing is done. Maybe we will not remember what we lost and what we won. Well, I'm going back to find something that I left behind. And this fading photograph, folded one too many times.
Ben Bedford's song, What We Lost, is the title track from the CD that came out last fall. and wife Carrie Bedford joining on the backing vocals. I was actually starting to read the text while you were going along, and then I wasn't looking up, and then I'd forgotten that Carrie was sitting there, and all of a sudden jumped in on the, on the background vocals. You sound beautiful together.
Oh, thank you.
How were you? I mean, have you been a singer, Carrie?
Before
running into Ben,
I think I'm sort of a backseat singer, I suppose. Just perfect for harmony singing. I always did high school, you know, choirs and musicals and church choirs and things like that. So that it sort of, when I outgrew those things, I sort of lost my opportunity, I guess, to sing as much. And then when I met Ben, it sort of, I don't know, I guess it sort of happened organically, you know, the way those things do. And I don't think he really knew that I could sing until, I think we'd been dating about a year and a half, though, when I
started. Well, I knew that she had been, like, in high school musicals and stuff like that, because we still have a copy of...
Yeah, that's
one of
true.
Our high school musicals.
Frightening thought.
Maybe we could play clips from that.
Yeah. yeah.
But, yeah, we started singing together. When we first started singing together, she wouldn't even let me look at her.
Yeah.
We had to sit with our backs to each other,
shy,
like on the couch.
Shy performer.
Yeah. So
I would sit, we'd sit back to back, and eventually we could face each other, and then eventually I could actually get out on stage, and, you know, and our friend Ann Bova actually shoved me up on stage once, and she said, "You will sing." And I did, and then it got less scary, and now you can't really shut me up. So,
do you go on tour with him?
Probably these days, about maybe 30 to 40% of the time. I have a small business that I have to run and two kids, and so that makes it a little bit harder to do everything. But if it's close by and
you can drive and come back.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So it's nice to not have to be away. So much. So.
Ben and Carrie Bedford based in Springfield. Well, they live in Springfield.
Yep.
Born and raised in our area, generally. You also, Carrie?
I'm from the Detroit area originally, basically I'm still a Midwestern girl.
That way.
Yeah.
Close enough. Wait, is that north?
Don't ask me. We're in a studio that has no...
We're in a cave.
I got kind of turned around.
No idea what direction. Yeah.
Ben will be playing at Norb Andy's in Springfield on Friday, February 1st. A lot of other shows, and I want to ask you about some of the ones coming up.
Sure.
Definitely not in our listening area. But first, let me mention that our broadcast today on Live and Local is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's music heritage at the University of Illinois. Now featuring new exhibits entitled America's Musical Past, Shenanigans, Hootenannies, and Other Twisted Adventures. More information is available at SousaArchives.org. And actually, that underwriting announcement there sort of fits into what I wanted to ask you about, you know, the notion of America's musical past. And I read a couple of places, I guess, that you, I don't know if this is your term or somebody else's term for the type of songs that you write. And actually, I'm losing it on my piece of paper, so you'll have to tell me what it is.
Is it the American
Portrait Songwriting?
Yeah, sure.
I knew it was on one of these piece of paper somewhere.
Did we come up with
I think we were trying to come up with something that, you know, that I think there's always a risk when you write songs in a certain way or when you do anything in a certain way, there's always a risk of being sort of pigeonholed as one thing or another. And I think we were worried that you would become the Civil War guy. And so we wanted to come up with something that wasn't so much about a particular subject as much as it was about... maybe a style of
or the spirit.
The spirit of the songs is that they're more like portraits or sketches of people, not that they're about particular eras or about particular things.
Well, the song you just sang, a good example. I mean, not directly a portrait. You said it was your grandfather.
My paternal grandpa. Yeah.
His brother had died.
Yep, his youngest brother. Yeah.
And so, you knew him, I assume.
Yeah.
The brother.
Well, no.
Or not.
No, the brother, he died in the Second World War.
Oh, okay. You did just say that.
That's okay.
And you're not that old.
But no.
It just seems that
I look like I could, no. I knew my grandpa, you know, at least as well as you can know your grandpa. He died when I was 12, but...
But that's the actual song was inspired by the photographs that are on the cover of What We Lost.
So in a way, it's a... kind of a portrait of a literal portrait.
Indeed, yeah, it is. Yes.
Which was not what I was going for.
Super
right?
meta. Yeah. It's weird.
But then also, the more historical Psalms aren't necessarily about individuals, but about
right.
things that happen.
Or events, yeah. specific events, or specific people.
Or fictional
within
people.
The context of those events. Yeah. Yeah.
You are quoted variously as saying you had some inspiration from this singer-songwriter Townes Van Zandt. I've heard his name. I had to look him up actually just a little bit ago. And here's somebody who wrote complex, interesting songs.
Yeah.
Couldn't sing very well, it appears to me. And had all
certainly
kinds
not
of,
classically trained, but he had,
no,
had an interesting
had piles of other problems with drug addictions and things
yes.
like that. And your comment in an article in Springfield, I think just last fall, was a quote, he was one of the first people that I listened to and I realized that there was a real art and a craft to songwriting, unquote. And I guess I wondered, once you discovered that for yourself, how did you go about learning the craft part of it?
That's a good question. My older sister, Tanya, gave me a copy of Townes Van Zandt's High, Low, In Between, which was the first time I'd ever heard him or heard of him. I think I was in high school, and I just was blown away by, like you said, the actual songwriting. Not that I hadn't been impressed by plenty of other songwriters and songs before, but there was just something about the way that it seemed like he approached a song. You know, in terms of sort of honing my own craft, I mean, I think it's, for me, it's just like just about anything else. And it was just like repetition and, you know, trial and failing.
Well, you read a lot.
Lots of reading.
I mean, that's part of being, I think, a writer, a good writer. Anyway, a good writer reads other writers. And, you know, it's how you stay in the dialogue. And that's how you stay in that conversation with you know.
She's like a whole other part of my brain.
Wow. Were you even?
I think very fast. Yeah.
That's good. I'm glad she's here.
Were you even writing songs at that point? I mean, you were all 17, I think.
No, I was not. I didn't start writing songs until I was like 19 or 20. So it took. I had to absorb it, I guess, for a while. He's got a lot of great albums, and he's not like as far as a singer goes, maybe not. I guess like what Carrie said, maybe not classically trained, but I find his voice really compelling and sort of very, there's something very human.
It's real. I mean, there's so many affected voices now,
like
you know, I mean, there's so many sounds that are manufactured that I think it's actually kind of refreshing to hear what somebody actually sounds like when they open their mouth and sing. So yeah, his voice isn't pretty, but you know, but it's real. And
it was I don't know. Yeah. Of course, people's voices change as they get older, but, you know, maybe slightly more pleasant.
And take a lot of drugs.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Toward the end of his life, yeah, his voice did change and not necessarily for the better.
I think his range kind of narrowed as he got older and, you know, deepened kind of.
And then you have voices like Greg Brown that just seem to get deeper and richer and darker as they get older, you know. You know, so, yeah, who knows?
When you approach a song, decide I'm going to write a song. Do you do that? Do you say I think I'm going to write a song now and sit down and start writing, or does something inspire you to say I think I need to write a song now?
Both, kind of. I would say I definitely do make a point of sitting down and writing, even when I don't necessarily have any inspiration in mind. And sometimes I kind of find my inspiration. I've sat down and written songs before that I thought were about one thing and actually it turned out to be about something else. Like I actually, you know, have decided that whatever I was writing I didn't like or whatever, and I just sort of overhauled the song but kept the structure or whatever. But yeah, I'm definitely inspired by specific things, like the title track to my second album, Land of the Shadows, which is about the murder of Emmett Till. Carrie and I had watched a documentary mm-hmm. about that. And, you know, I had heard the story before, you know, studying American history, but something about the documentary just sort of hit home. And once again, it was kind of like, I think we watched the documentary probably 9 months before I actually wrote the song, but it sort of stewed in there for a while. And then one day I just, that one was maybe the best example of a time where I had to write a song right then. I had to sit down and I had to write it. And it was like in the middle of the night that I wrote that song.
So after steeping for a while, well, for a long while, this idea, or at least this topic, at some point something crystallized and said, there it is. Excuse me, Carrie, I'm going downstairs.
Right, yeah. Basically, yeah, that has happened, where I've just been like, well, I've got to go write. I've got something rolling around in my head that just seems like it has to come out.
And then does it come out quickly, typically?
Or? Sometimes, but sometimes not. Sometimes it'll feel like I've got something in there, and I'll sit down to write, and I'll get like a verse, and I'll really like the verse, but then it just stops, and nothing seems to. And those I just leave to come back to later, I guess, if I think it's good enough. Like if I think the first verse is like, wow, that's really, I think that's a really great start, then I'll really work at it and try to, you know, I don't want to say force something to come out, but just, you know, sit and this is where I drive Carrie crazy, but I'll sit and like stare at the wall and play the same three or four chords over and over and over again for 2 or 3 hours and sing nonsense, you know, sort of sing nonsense lines, lyrics out loud. And it's a pretty awful thing to listen to, probably.
So is songwriting for you not actually sitting down with a pencil in your hand and
sometimes
writing.
It is, but oftentimes not.
Usually it seems like he does both. He has both together.
Yeah, usually I would say, at least lately, it's been, maybe I'll have like a line or two in my head that will just, I'll write down, and then later I'll go sit down and just sort of sing those two lines and sort of try to come up with something that feels organic on the guitar that goes along with that, and then see if anything sort of flows out after it. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
Can we hear something that maybe is of a different sort of portrait than what we just heard?
Sure.
You can interpret that however you want, of course.
Sure, yeah, we do John the Baptist. We didn't know him personally. So.
No, John the Baptist we didn't know personally. No.
But it's a portrait nonetheless.
Yeah, this is a song, I guess. I don't, it's sort of a, it's about John the Baptist, I guess. That was, but.
That was the inspiration.
Yeah. That was the original inspiration, but maybe people can get other things out of it too. From the sun, his face was flecked with sweat. Red stain on the back of his neck. Howling out beneath the sky. You don't have to be afraid to die. River water's cool and clean. Burnt scent off like gasoline. Mind your tooth for tooth. From a madman, truth is still the truth. You've been warned you won't get far. Life's crooked as a scimitar. Cut the cord, there ain't no doubt. There's one way in, one way out. Down through time it's been foretold. With tongues as hot as burnished coal. A harbinger of hair and bone. Wailing in the wild alone. Wanna see what's up above. And pledge your heart to the hanging judge. Don't wait around cause time rolls fast. The present's just the recent past. You've been warned you won't get far. Life's crooked as a scimitar.
Cut the cord, there ain't no doubt. It's one way in, one way out. Well, the devil skulks round every bend, and a broken soul you cannot mend, not till you raise repentant hands. And a thorn tree in the garden stands, from the sun his face was flecked with sweat, a red stain on the back of his neck, howling out beneath the sky. You don't have to be afraid to die. You don't have to be afraid to die.
Just keeps ringing.
Well, yeah, I like the guitar.
Doesn't the guitar ring away like that?
You sort of laughed after the previous song too. I didn't
know. Yeah,
guitarists do this little wiggle thing, you
right.
know, sort of let it. And to be honest, I can't hear that anything actually happens when you do.
No,
that.
I don't think anything does. No.
Supposed to make the sound go farther or something.
Maybe,
like
yeah.
that.
Maybe, yeah.
But in any event,
just silly, really.
John the Baptist, the name of the song by Ben Bedford, who's with us live on Live and Local, along with his wife Carrie Bedford in the backing vocals, and often filling in his thoughts as we have a conversation. So, you know, you said it's sort of about, definitely inspired by John the Baptist of biblical fame.
That's the guy.
And you can read into all kinds of things. The rest of it, and I'm reading and I'm listening and I'm having trouble.
Uh huh.
Figuring out where else you're going. What
okay.
else was in your mind?
Well,
besides, how did you start with that John the Baptist and get where you got?
Okay, that's a good question.
This is another notion. You know, another way of getting at the craft of the song thing.
Sure. Well. The initial sort of thing, I think, for me in terms of the song was I was just trying to get like some fat, you know, sort of like some just pictures in my head, some details, yeah, that sort of I remembered from learning about John the Baptist at various times in my life, I guess, and getting those into the song in some capacity, of course, like the, you know, wailing out in the wilderness and the camel hair shirt and eating locusts and stuff like that. I didn't get the locusts in there, but but I just tried to go with the basic outline of the story and sort of just a portrait fashion and construct the song. And somehow I just came up with that first line, which is kind of like when you say it, I'll say it and don't sing it. It sounds kind of convoluted, but from the sun, his face was flecked with sweat, red stain on the back of his neck. And then I just sort of went from there and the rest of the song came out. But I guess when I was writing the song, it possibly is sort of an example of me trying to sort through things that I've believed and then maybe don't believe anymore. Try to articulate that in a song or something.
Well, and I think too it sort of brings to mind the modern day evangelist as well. And so it's not necessarily a particularly flattering portrait of the fire and brimstone message, you know. And so I think that's all kind of crammed in there too, which I guess I, you know, to be fair, I didn't get that all of that at first listen. I was just like, wow, this is a great song. And that was my reaction to it. I was like, I could dance to this. And then I'm like listening. Because it's really dark, you know. It's really, really kind of a brooding, serious song with a great beat. so, yeah, there's a lot in there, really.
Yeah. I mean, I was raised Methodist, so not really...
Not a fire and brimstone.
Not really a fire and brimstone upbringing or anything. And I think in the last... Probably like
you're more likely to get pummeled with hugs, really.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Really nice
and potlucks.
And potlucks.
Yeah, but you know, in the last probably like 7 or 8 years, I've been working through a lot of different things just in my head, and you know, doing a lot of reading, and you know, I kind of, I guess you could say, slowly lost my faith over the over the past several years, and this is maybe just sort of a. Manifestation of that possibly or something, you know, my
look back at it from a different from a newfound perspective.
Yeah, right? That could be. Yeah, something like that, you know.
You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Ben Bedford has a show locally coming up pretty soon, Friday, February 1st. I guess that's a week from this coming Friday, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not too far
in Springfield
away.
where he lives at Norb Andes. And then after that, going not only over the Midwest, but elsewhere in the U.S. And then elsewhere in the world. More on that in just a moment. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, an authorized Karastan broadloom and rug dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. So you'll be in Canada next month for a while, and then in April... the Netherlands, and in Scotland. I was reading somewhere along the line that among the nicer comments and also the better, some of the big lists that you're on of how well your album has done are from people who appreciate American singer-songwriting in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's a big Americana scene in Europe, which is... wacky, but true. Yeah.
How did they find you, and then how did you manage to get gigs in the Netherlands?
Well,
or Scotland or Canada?
Yeah. Well, both were sort of similar situations in terms of how I ended up playing over there. I had my last album before this most recent one reviewed in a couple different publications in Europe, and I actually just sort of said to the people who wrote the reviews who have since become friends, hey, you know, I'd love to come over and play over there. Do you have any suggestions on agents or whatever to talk to in terms of booking a tour? And I got pointed in a couple different directions, and both just sort of worked out.
Yeah, it's helpful to have a booking agent in Europe, or two booking agents.
I've got
that makes a big difference.
My booking agent John is in Scotland, and then booking agent Joanna in The Hague in the Netherlands. And they pull the shows together for me. And
it's nice because I mean they know they're taking a risk, and the artist knows, you know, obviously that he or she is taking a risk, but. If they like you and it works out, then, you know, it just hopefully keeps growing. People seem to be, they seem to respond to American folk music or Americana music in a way that maybe...
Some Americans don't?
Some Americans don't, yeah.
Was your fourth time in Europe, something like that?
It will be, yeah. The first two times I went to Europe, and I guess where I got bitten by the bug to play and travel around Europe was I went to Sweden, Sweden and Denmark, but mostly Sweden the first two times, and played with my friend Eva Hillerud over there, and just had a great time both times. And
what kind of, how do audiences compare to what you get here? I mean, I imagine that, I assume, partly from looking at the places that you play, that
sure.
A lot of places in the Midwest anyway, and maybe elsewhere in the States are, small.
Mm-hmm.
People may go there to listen to you, or they may go there to eat. And oh, there's some guy singing up there.
Sure.
while I'm eating, what right. Is it similar in your experience so far in Europe, or do you actually get bigger venues with people who came from
I would
near
say
and far to hear you?
Typically speaking, both in the U.S. and in Europe, the audiences generally are, you know, small. I would say relatively small. You know, typically anywhere from 30 people to 100 people, you know, is sort of typical depending on sort of what kind of venue it is. But I'd say in both places I've been lucky enough to get into some really great venues that people...
They're listening rooms
yeah. for, yeah, lack of a better word, that they're places where people do come to listen to the music and possibly eat and drink too, but, you know... Generally, you know, I do still play some places where, you know, it's not strictly a listening room, but...
Well, I'm thinking Norb Andy's, for
yeah.
example.
Yeah.
I've been there a couple times.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a Springfield icon. It's
yeah,
just,
Norb's
you know,
is like
a,
I'm sentimentally sort of attached a, to, yeah. to Norb Andy's,
it's
you know.
It's just such a landmark. I mean, it's a great place to
and
play.
It's a fun, it's a
it's
fun,
a fun gig.
Place.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It takes the pressure off sometimes, too, to play in places like that. You're just having, you know, you're just playing and not... necessarily worried about every note or every, you know, lyric being accurate. So it's good to have those occasionally too.
But I would say comparing the two audiences, an American audience versus a European audience, I'd say, you know, like I've had great audiences in both the States and in Europe, and they're, you know, when the audiences are good in both places, they're great to have, you know.
So. I think the key difference is over there sometimes people are coming because they're part of a folk club. They're part of like an organization that
point.
Gets together and listens to new music together. And sometimes they're coming because they're informed and they're already Ben Bedford listeners, which is really nice. But the state, I mean, this is a huge country and we travel and there are a bajillion artists. And so if we play in a listening room here, oftentimes it's people who are just regular audience members of a series or, you know, and they're just open to new music. And so they're not necessarily already Ben Bedford fans, but they are
hopefully we'll snag some of them.
Yeah, hopefully we'll convince them by the end of the night that now they're a Ben, but now you're a Ben Bedford fan. You know, but they don't necessarily come. Like, I think a couple times, you know, Ben showed up at gigs and people already had his CD in Europe, and I was just blown away by that. You know, we're so tiny still that like those little things can make a huge difference in terms of like, oh, well, maybe we are, you know, having an impact on people. And
I would definitely say that. I mean, in terms of my sort of press and magazines and online CD review places and et cetera, a lot of them come from the UK or continental Europe. And I, you know, I'd say I definitely sell definitely a large chunk of my online CD sales go across
and downloads.
The Atlantic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like downloads and stuff like that. So it's definitely, I mean, there's definitely a scene over there. People definitely are listening to their, you know, Americana folk, whatever radio stations and saying, oh, this sounds cool. I'll go download a few songs from it, you know. And they do that here too. But like Carrie said, I think it's a good point is the countries are smaller geographically and you know, so a radio station there just with the densely packed population just, you know, seems to reach a pretty good sized audience. I don't know. I'm just speculating, but mm-hmm. I like to speculate.
Yeah. you're entitled.
Yeah.
You go right ahead. Sometimes that's all you can do.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Ben Bedford is my guest here on Live and Local, along with his wife, Carrie, who is a photographic artist and also a backup singer for Ben on some of his gigs and also on some of the records. You've got some other people who join you on some of the records as well. The songs we've heard so far all come from records that have been out. Do you have any that haven't been recorded yet?
I don't actually have any songs. I played at a songwriters in the round thing the other night, and I was the only one of the four songwriters that hasn't written a song in like the last several months.
Really?
I'm very bad at multitasking. So I always hear these stories about people who go into the studio and they're like, I was recording this album and I was just so inspired by recording the album that I wrote like five songs while I was recording the album and here they are. And I'm like, I can't even, I have a hard time like sitting still and listening. And, you know, I have to listen over and over and over. I don't even have time to write any songs while I'm making an album. I just have to make the album. So.
Ben is a cross-country runner, or a former cross-country runner. So that's something that I think that it, like, that's key. I think that plays into it. I mean, he's somebody who can go the, you know, go the distance and stay focused and stay with something for a very long time. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he could like juggle while running.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good comparison, actually. I probably, yeah. In a lot of ways, I probably approach like my
everything.
Songwriting and my sort of guitar playing in the same sort of manner that I would have approached distance running, and in that it's just a lot of practice and
drilling,
repetition, and just like a sort of rabid, you know, dedication to regularity, I guess, or something. I don't know. Well, I'm dedicated to regularity.
So that's good.
So I withdraw the request for something new. How about something else?
Something
new?
Old, yeah.
Sure, yeah.
How about something?
Yeah, sure.
Or we could do a town song, too.
We could do
somebody else's song?
Yeah, we could do a town song. Yeah.
We were talking about towns earlier.
Sure,
yeah.
Go right ahead. I didn't know you ever did that, actually.
Occasionally, we do covers, yeah, of stuff we really like. And this is a Towns Van Sant song that was on his album, The Late Great Towns Van Sant, which he wasn't dead when it was recorded. Or
only,
obviously he wasn't dead when it was recorded.
Only mostly dead, but, yeah. As they say.
But yeah, but you know, it was sort of a joke. He had an interesting sense of humor. But it came out in the 70s, and it's a great album. And this is a song called Snow Don't Fall. That is the song we're doing,
yes.
Right? Okay,
mm-hmm.
Good. That's good. We're going to start on the same song.
I guess.
Snow don't fall on summer's time. Wind don't blow below the sea. My love lies neath frozen skies and waits in sweet repose for me. Her eyes did laugh, her lips did sing, her legs did roll, my soul to bring. Hair did curl and her thoughts unfurl like birds upon the wings of spring. My love I need not see to know she cast her glance at me. Well, snow don't fall on summer's time. Wind don't blow below the sea. My love lies neath frozen skies and waits and sweet. Waits and sweet repose to me.
A Towns Van Sant song sung by Ben and Carrie Bedford. Ben's on the guitar. You started your guitar studies doing classical.
Mm-hmm, I did, yeah.
And that seems to carry through. You got some nice guitar work going on.
Thank you very much. I love to play the guitar.
Well, it sounds like it. We've done a lot of talking, so I think maybe let's let you do another song.
We don't hardly
have any time left. Let me mention do a little bit of housekeeping and say that our programs today are made possible on Live and Local, in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign. For over 25 years, 10,000 Villages has provided income to artisans in more than 30 developing countries by marketing their handicrafts and telling their stories in North America. This is 90.9 WYNL-FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Tomorrow we've got another singer-songwriter locally actually going to be on our show. And I'm embarrassed that I'm just suddenly forgetting his name. Chris Corkery, sorry. And also be talking with conductor of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra about the Illinois Chamber Orchestra's concerts this weekend. Did you decide?
We did.
And what'll it be?
We're going to play a song called 21, which is on
Land of the Shadows.
Land of the Shadows.
Mm-hmm. Which is the second.
That's right.
Ben Bedford's records.
Mm-hmm. Red winged blackbird on a split rail fence, I ain't seen since God knows when. Months ago, up in Illinois, along the Sangamon with my wife and boy, God, I'm only 21. I got a muzzle-loading 58 Springfield gun. But I'd rather push my wooden plow. I'd feel the strain of the ox in a sweat-stained brow. And I'd go back home, but I don't know how. My face is black from the cook fire soot. I got worn out legs and 10 blisters on each foot. My letters might find her, but hers don't find me. Say the post got lost up in Tennessee. And I'm proud to serve, I just feel alone. At least the gray coats ain't so far from home. At night I hear those swampland sounds. The mosquitoes here must weigh 15 pounds. And I'd go back home, but I don't. I'd go back home, but I don't know how. Last night we climbed up to the levee top. We could see the holes in the houses where the balls had dropped. And 12-pound, 10-pound, 8-pound shells. There was a symphony of crashes with the town hall bell. And it makes my heart stop every time. Iron hits a white frame house like mine. John Pemberton, please surrender now. 'Cause there's a stale smell over Vicksburg town. And I'd go back home, but I don't know how.
red-winged blackbird on a split-rail fence. I ain't seen since God knows.